Henry, hi, it's Jeffrey Kleinman with DVDTalk.com.
How you doing?
Good. Is now still a good time for your interview?
It's the time.
It's the time. Well, it's always exciting when a Henry Rollins DVD hits my desk, so it's great to see the shock and awe out on DVD.
Oh, thank you.
I saw you here in Portland when you did it, and I think it was about a three-hour concert.
Yep.
How did you go through and filter it down to 90 minutes?
Well, you know, some of those stories take quite a long time to do. So you can just, if you edit out one or two of those kind of epic length tales, then you have your show.
Yeah, but what's missing is the Iggy Pop story. The great story between you and Iggy Pop.
Oh, that's on a different DVD.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, I've done a bunch of DVDs. It always brings you so much joy when they come across your desk. You should check them out when they do. Yeah, that's on the DVD before.
Okay. So of all the stories that you tell, do you have a favorite one? Is there one that you would never get sick of talking about?
Or... Well, I dispense with all the stuff per tour. I mean, once the tour's over, it's all new material. So it's I don't even remember stuff from two tours ago. I mean, I if someone brings it up, I remember it, but I just I keep it real current. So last year I talked about, you know, all that stuff that's on that Shock and Awe DVD for shows at the end of this year. I'd be hopefully having enough interesting experiences happen, you know, in the next several months to, you know, kind of re-up the set list of material. That's why I don't repeat material. It's like, you know, going to see a first run film, and it's a film you've seen before. It's not what you pay for. And if I was an audience member, having spent hard earned money on a ticket, I don't want to hear last year's stories. That's not the thing. So I try and keep the new material coming, and there's, you know, different ways of achieving that. You know, you have to be inventive, and you have to live in a manner that, you know, will generate something of interest. So, you know, it keeps me moving, you know, definitely.
Do you ever go back and go over the old DVDs and watch yourself, and are you able to do that?
No, I couldn't stand it. I mean, it's hard enough just being there for the final edit.
So once...
I don't like watching myself. I'd rather just, you know, do it and do the next thing.
So do you have DVDs that you like to watch? Are there things that you?
Well, I watch DVDs all the time. Sure, just not of me.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I watch films, a lot of films, and some I've seen many times, like, you know, something like The Godfather or Doctor Strangelove. I don't know how many times I've seen Doctor Strangelove.
So the whole Henry's Film Corner on IFC, how did that all come about?
There was a company, Swift River, who are the producers, and they approached my manager and I about the idea, and they had the idea fully fleshed out, and they said, we think Henry's the guy for this. And I have to think that they probably had a list of people they wanted, and I don't know where I was on that list. I can't think I was the first person on their list. I heard they were also looking at Dennis Leary, who was, you know, amazing. But they asked if I was interested, and I looked over the treatment, which is basically what the show is. And I said, yeah, that looks like something I could do and something I'd be interested in. So, yeah, turn me loose on that. And they did. And so I did it. You know, we did the promo, little 12-minute version. Shopped it around, and the Independent Film Channel said, well, here's a bigger budget, make a full-length one. And we did, and they said, okay, now make a season's worth. And that took about a year and some months. And meanwhile, I'm on tour, and I was just, you know, going here and there, and every once in a while I would, you know, hear from the Swift River guys, hey, we're still shopping that demo. I'm like, oh, yeah, you guys. You know, I'd moved on. And then all of a sudden it's back in play. And I'm in a meeting with the IFC people in New York on my last tour last year. And all of a sudden, you know, we've got a TV show. And so here we are two episodes in and shooting the third one this coming weekend.
So how are you able to watch the movies, record the show, tour for the spoken word, manage having a DVD coming out, have a radio show? It must be quite a bit on your plate.
Well, it's all I do. I mean, I just do this stuff, and I also have a publishing company. It's where I'm talking to you from now. So I work 7 days a week, about 12 months a year, pretty much. I mean, I was here on Christmas Day at the office. I was here New Year's Day. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying, you know, to do all of that, yeah, it takes a lot of commitment. Last year was 90 speaking dates, two movies, three USO tours. I was in Iraq and Kuwait and Afghanistan and all kinds of places. Did the radio show, had the TV show, and put out a book. So it was, you know, but that's kind of how I work.
So going back after your first USO to do two other ones, what was that experience like?
Well, it was an eye-opener. The first one I did was December of 2003. And I went to Afghanistan and Kyrgyzstan and Qatar. And it was different, you know, than a lot of places I'd ever been. I mean, the closest that I'd ever seen anything that was like reminded me of Afghanistan was maybe Morocco or Egypt. But it was hugely interesting to me. And while I can't really support the Bush administration, I have no real problem with the troops, because they don't dictate policy, they just kind of go where they're told. So I don't have a beef with the troops in Iraq, I just have a beef with that we're in Iraq. So after I finished the first one, I said, well, can I do another one? And they said, okay. I said, can I go to Iraq? And they said, well, we'll work on it. So it finally came through in May of last year, and I went to Kuwait and Iraq. And then after that, I said, can I go somewhere else? And then I ended up going to Honduras to the Sado Cano base near Tegucigalpa. And then this last December, they put me in Afghanistan and Kyrgyzstan and Abu Dhabi and Dubai.
Wow.
And I've asked for another trip. And I think in February or March, I think it's February, I'm going to go visit troops at Walter Reed Hospital. And apparently it's pretty traumatic, you know, a lot of really horrific injuries. But they asked if I would go, and I said, yeah. And after that, the next USO tour, they said it might be Guantanamo base in Cuba. It might be Kosovo and Bosnia. It's just depending on what they need, when they need it. And I said, well, you know, we're ready. So they said probably it'll be March, April, they'll put me somewhere.
It must be mind-blowing. Finding yourselves in these places of the world.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the reasons I go. I mean, I'm curious about places I've never been, so I want to go see these places. And so, yeah, I go, learn a whole lot, learn a lot that I'm not going to find out on the news. And, you know, being the writer type, you know, it's always an interesting topic, you know, and being on stage telling stories, it makes for a pretty compelling story.
Of all the places you've been to, both with the USO tour and through speaking and just through living, is there a place that you hold dear to your heart that, you know, that you, if you could choose anywhere, would go back to?
Yeah, I'd like to go back to Egypt, just because 1 week really isn't enough. It's just, you know, it's so fascinating seeing all those big ruins. I'd like to spend more time in Russia. I've been there a bunch of times, but never with the time I want. I'd like to spend more time in St. Petersburg. And I plan on doing that. I will get back there. But as far as places I've been, those are probably the two I'd like to go back to. I'm getting in May, I think it is. May, I have a tour of Australia. And after the tour is over, I'm going to send my luggage back and go up to Cambodia and Vietnam, because it's a very short flight. And I've never been to those places before. I've been to the region. You know, I've been to Thailand and Singapore and places like that, but I've never been to Cambodia and Vietnam. And hopefully there'll be something left of those countries. You know, I don't know how hard hit they were.
Yeah.
But I've been curious about Vietnam for many years and somewhat Cambodia. I'd like to learn more. I'd like to go. There's a couple of war museums in Phnom Penh I'd like to go visit.
In addition to that, I mean, you've obviously met quite a number of people, and I think what's really fascinating to hear you talk about your meetings with people is there anybody you haven't met that you that you know you'd give your eye teeth for, or somebody that you'd
sure
do anything like to sit to meet, down for 5 minutes or an hour and talk to?
Yeah, I'd like to meet. I wouldn't just on the fan side of things. I wouldn't mind meeting Gladys Knight. I always thought she was really cool. I'd like to meet David Johansen. I've always been a fan of his, the guy from the Dolls.
Mm-hmm.
As far as non-musician types, I've exchanged letters with Mark Crispin Miller, the political writer. He's a professor at NYU. I'd like to talk to him like face to face. I'm sure I'll meet him at some point. I'd like to meet him. I'd love to meet Muhammad Ali. That's probably number one on my list.
Mm-hmm.
He's a huge hero to me.
Definitely.
I'd like to meet him. I'd love to meet Kofi Annan. Past that, I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of people, but I just don't know what I'd necessarily do if I met them. I'd love to meet Werner Herzog,
mm-hmm.
the director. I just think he's extraordinary. Those films are just mad, you know?
Definitely.
I'd love to meet Wim Wenders.
So are you ever surprised when people are, I mean, taking the other side of that, when people are huge fans of you and, you know, being the object of fandom?
Yeah. I mean, it's always made me curious. I've never really gotten used to it. It is kind of part of being, you know, putting out stuff. There's going to be someone who likes it. Yeah, I mean, I've been signing autographs for 25 years, so you kind of are used to, you know, being at the airport and you're going to meet some people. If you go to the shopping mall or a movie, you're going to meet some people, or to a restaurant, you know, you're going to meet some people. So that I've grown used to, and I've kind of grown used to the idea of, you know, your personal space is kind of, it's the only the space that they're letting you have at any given time of the day, unless I'm alone in my house. And that's okay. That's kind of part of the deal. It is interesting sometimes when people who I'm a big fan of come up to me and tell me they're a big fan of mine, because you just don't think that, you know, David Bowie is going to be able to quote you from interviews you've done. Or Brian May is going to say, oh, you know, huge fan, okay. You know, it's stuff like that. It's interesting. It's cool, but it's nice when just somebody walks up to you and goes, hey, I really liked your last book. Or, you know, you get into a conversation with someone at the line at the grocery store like I did yesterday. They just told me that they really liked my radio show. And that's all, you know, it's all very, very cool, very, very nice.
Speaking about your radio show, I'd heard your first broadcast, and you're like, you know, hey, it's Denny Rollins, and I'm just going to play some cool stuff. Here it is. And then obviously Context, which is just refreshing.
Well, that's all the show ever was. I stopped doing it at the end of last year. I just don't really have time right now. But, yeah, I did that show for like 30 weeks, and it was fun. It was really fun. And that's all I ever did, was I just would come up with a playlist to play, you know, some cool, eclectic, different stuff, and huge response. I mean, lots of really nice letters. And the farther out I took the playlist, like I play like Sun Ra and Albert Eiler and stuff, and I didn't think people would be into that, and they're like really into it. You know, the farther out I got, the more people were into it. You know, I play Ornette Coleman, and I get all these letters. I was expecting the letters to be like, what the fuck is this? And they'd be like, that was so cool, you played Ornette. I'm like, okay.
Do you have an album or albums that you wish you could share with everybody in the world, that you could sit somebody down and say, no, listen to this album. You must experience in this.
Yeah,
album.
Sure. I think every young person should at least listen to Funhouse once. You know, the second Stooges album.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's the greatest rock and roll album I've ever heard.
Have you heard anything in the modern, you know, space of music that has touched you the way some of the more now quote unquote classic stuff has?
No way. I mean,
anything even come close?
No, I mean, I'm a product of my time. I mean, I'm not saying everything now sucks, but a record that I think is as awesome as Exile on Main Street or Houses of the Holy, no. I think there's great. I mean, I have a lot of records, and I think I have some. Put it this way, I'm a fan of every record I own. So I'd like to think I have good taste in music. It's good enough for me. And I have a lot of records, from the last several years, which I think are great, but not as good as Zeppelin IV or the first Van Halen album or, Rocks by Aerosmith or, Kind of Blue or A Love Supreme. I don't think
Definitely.
anything in my collection from like the 90s comes close to that. I mean, I really thought Jane's Addiction was one of the finest live bands I've ever seen. Just unbelievable. Like, what a tremendous live thing. As good as when I saw Led Zeppelin, I think. Minor Threat, that was a great live band. The Bad Brains, forget it. They like wrote the book pretty much. That was a great live band. Fugazi, great live band. Black Flag. All the SST bands, the Minutemen, I never saw them do a bad show. I mean, there's tons of bands like that where it was just a great night out. And the only reason I'm not, I could wear you out with, all the great bands. So I'm not saying everything sucks, but a record that really moves me, probably the last time I bought a record that was just brilliant all the way through. I think Nick Cave does that to me. Like this, his new collection, I think, is extraordinary. It blows the last album away, and I think I wrote him a letter after I played it. I said, you and Dylan are like the only guys writing songs right now, and I think the last two Dylan records have just been incredible. Time Out of Mind and was it Love and Theft or whatever it's called. Those were just amazing.
How about movies? Movies beyond Strangelove and Godfather.
There's that whole era of movies, I think are great, and I think there's lots of great comedy from that era too, like Animal House and Caddyshack and all that stuff, classics. I think there's been a lot of really good films. I thought Sling Blade was just one of the finest films I've ever seen. I just have a thing for that film. I really like it. I think there's been, some great stuff in film, especially independent film. I thought the Assassination of Richard Nixon, that Sean Penn film, is just a mind blower. I mean, music is just different for me than movies, as far as the classic movies are great, On the Waterfront and stuff like that, or they're perfect. And, Godfather, you can't knock these films, Raging Bull, Taxi Driver, whatever. But I think there's been any great number of films since, the stuff Jarmusch does, David Lynch, Wim Wenders, has been doing great stuff. I think Kurosawa was interesting all the way through, But with music, in the 90s, something happened to the production to me where the Pro Tools started coming in, pitch correction started coming in on rock music. And all of a sudden, it started sounding very tame to me and just kind of quantized and contained. And that's just not really what I want from my rock and roll. Where you listen to an older record and you go, yeah, those are people in a room, really, really playing.
You can hear the space.
Yeah, and that's what I miss. I miss the space. I miss the sound of a guitar in a room where you can hear the air around it. And who makes records like that still? Tom Waits does. Bob Dylan does. I mean, a lot of bands do. I mean, there's a lot of fantastic labels doing all kinds of stuff. I mean, I really like that noise band Wolf Eyes. I think they're awesome. Huge fan of them. A lot of DC bands, Q and Not You. The Black Eyes, great stuff. El Guapo, great DC band. And so there's great music all the time everywhere, but as far as has there been a classic album, maybe for a 20-year-old, it might be, you know, the new album by, you know, whoever. It might have been Jeff Buckley for someone who's like 33. I think it's a product of your time and place.
Right.
Where, you know, for a lot, you know, if you went to see a Jane's Addiction show and you could look in the audience and see what those people are going through, that was their youth. You know, that was that big summer. And if you're a rock and roll kid, you know, if you're a music person, and you're smart enough, you know, lucky enough to be in a cool city, you have those great summers where, you know, you just went out to see way too many shows. And it's some of the best times you'll ever have. And, you know, for me, those were some great times. And for a bit of that, I was actually, you know, on stage. So I was lucky enough to see bands like the Buzzcocks and, you know, Gang of Four and, you know, Ramones when they were a club band, the Cramps when they were in literally, you know, 175 paid, and you'd buy the single from the roadie on the way out for $2. I got to see a lot of shows like that. You know, the Bad Brains, like, you know, easily like less than 10 shows in is when I started seeing them, like in people's living rooms. And so I can hold that stuff up where for someone else it might be Green Day. And I think it's just a time and place. At a certain age, some stuff gets indelibly imprinted. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still listen to all that stuff. You know, I still listen to the Buzzcocks and the UK Subs and the Adverts and old Ted Nugent records and King Crimson. And, you know, it all works for me. But, you know, as does, you know, Dinosaur Jr. and Sonic Youth. And, you know, there's lots of good bands.
And it's, I mean, I find for me personally, because I'm in my 30s, going back from when I came of, you know, age and listening to some of the bands now, some of them hold up differently.
Yeah, than yeah, I remember. And that's because you're going through different things as you grow.
Right. And some, I mean, some, you know, for me, it's Nirvana. I mean, it's, you know, to throw back their first album and hear what, you know, what that sounded like compared to, you know, the copy of the copy of the copy that's out now.
Yeah, I mean, Kurt, you know, and that band arguably, you know, launched many, many a ship in a career. You know, and you can say the same of like a Fugazi and a Dead Kennedys or, you know, and Kurt was one of those guys. And he was for real. And those are really good records. And he was a great musician, you know, talented and inspired. And, you know, told the truth. He really let it hang out there. And I think that's why those records stand up, because the guy, you know, he wasn't fucking around. He wasn't trying to be cute. He was letting it hang out, which is, you know, that's what you want.
Right.
And a lot of times these days, that's the problem for me with a lot of bands. It seems like they came up with the look of the band before they came up with the music, or the way their pants are is more important than how the music sounds. And they'll be happy to let the music be, you know, made, you know, let the A&R guy really worry about that. And, you know, bands that actually think about a single, that's just hilarious to me.
I mean, they sit down and try to make their single.
Well, it's one thing if you're Madonna or, you know, Diana Ross, you know, where it is, you know, or Janet Jackson, where it is all about a single. But a rock band... You know, I don't know if you know or care, but Led Zeppelin never issued singles. They just said, "Here's the album," and the radio station will go, "What's the single?" They go, "We're fucking Led Zeppelin, man. Just play it. You know, it's good enough for you." And you know, those albums are, and they never sucked up. They just said, "Well, you know, you play what you want, but it's Led Zeppelin. It's all good." And I agree. It is. They are. There's no bad Zeppelin records to me.
Yeah,
I might play more than others, but, you know,
Well, it's a different album oriented rock is a different era than the download the single from, you know, this one album because the rest of it sucks.
Yeah, and I think the downloading thing is cool because it has made the major labels have to really freak out and get very scared, which I love. But it's also going to have some very intense effects on the music industry as we know it, and I think there's going to be quite a shakeup, I believe, with the major labels. I really think so, just because you're not, so many bands are making cool records on their laptops now. They don't need, you know, it's not possible for the major labels to always make these guys like, you know, chop cotton. A lot of the slaves are leaving the plantation now. I mean, you couldn't pay me enough money to go be on a major label now. I make my own records. I pay for them. I do the publishing deal. I own all of it. I own the photo session that's on the cover of the record. I license them out to different territories. They pay for themselves and go into the profit margin like before the record comes out. And I own them. In 5 years, all the licensees have to come back and we go back into negotiations again. And if you're a major label and Kurt Cobain does that, then you are screwed because he just goes to BMG Distribution and goes, here's my record, distribute it. And they go, okay, and it comes out on Kurt Cobain Records. And all of a sudden, Geffen is like going, uh-oh, we're destabilized. And so that's why the major labels have been like screaming, piracy, you bastards, I love it. You know, I encourage people, they go, well, what about people downloading your shit? I'm like, you know, go ahead, do it, because people have always found a way to screw the artist, and, you know, go ahead. At least you're listening to me. I'd rather be listened to than paid, so.
So of all the things you've done, and you've done, you know, between the books and the speaking and the, you know what you've done, you know, is there something that you haven't done that you would, you know, that you would really, you aspire to do or would really love to do?
I would like to write a good book, and I think I have yet to do that. And I'd like to do a bit of travel to some places that I have not yet been to. But as far as do I want to direct a film, do I want to write the great screenplay? No. I would like to get better at that which I am struggling with now, especially the book thing. Of all the stuff I've ever done, it's the hardest. And of all the stuff I've ever done, it's the thing I'd like to be the best at.
Wow. That's really cool. So you have.
If I could just be a writer, if I was good enough to write, I would. That would be fine for me.
So you never drank the L.A. Kool-Aid, as they say.
What's that?
No, I mean the getting the bug to direct and to scream.
Oh, hell no. No, because I've done a bunch of movies. I've been in a lot of movies. And I've been around some really good directors. And you find out very quickly that you don't have that kind of talent. Mm-hmm. Like if you hang around with a David Fincher or a David Lynch or a Michael Mann, people like that, you realize very quickly that you're not really batting in that range.
You're not wired that way.
No, it's a different way of thinking. And directors are some of the most brilliant people I've ever met. They just, like, I'm one of the episodes of my movie show, you know, I hung out with David Fincher, who I've met before, and he's a really good man. But listening to him speak about film and how he makes film, it's just fascinating. He's like one of the most articulate people I've ever been around. He's just riveting. And you're like, wow, that's why he gets the big bucks. Like, listen to this. It's fascinating. And I just don't have that talent. I'm not all that talented. I'm just really determined.
Don't underestimate yourself. you know, about writing books, the book that, when you talk about writing books, the book that comes to mind is the David Carradine autobiography. Have you ever read his autobiography?
No.
You should check it out. Just because his book is his tales of his life in a similar way that your spoken word are the tales of your life. And it's a big ass book, and it's kind of sort of out of print, but
oh, I can find it. I can find
any
book.
But you know, it just when I was reading it, there was a mental connection for me between that story and that kind of story and some of the things that you talk about.
Huh. Well, I'm sure he's had a hell of a life.
Oh yeah. But again, excited about Shock and Awe coming to DVD. I was at the show when you were here in Portland, Oregon, and absolutely.
It's pretty much the same set. I mean, you know, the same basic chunk of ideas. I think those shows were within two nights of each other.
Yeah, I mean,
but
the
show came out good. It's a good-looking DVD as far as, like, looking at it. It's, like, shot in high definition, and it looks okay. And I actually, I remember it being a good show. I walked off stage and went, okay, you know, that didn't suck. For $60,000, you hope it doesn't.
So, do you have plans for the next DVD, the next tour?
Well, I have to finish off that tour. You know, I didn't get to Europe and Australia, so I have to finish those dates, which I leave for this weekend. And then I'll start pulling together new material. A lot of new material I'll be kind of fleshing out on these upcoming European dates. You know, stuff that's happened since April when the major chunk of the tour was over.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like nothing more than to have a whole bunch of new material and be on the road right now. Traditionally, we start these tours in January, and this year I'll just be finishing last year's tour in January and maybe getting back out into America later this year. I've got a lot of work this summer I have to do. I have to finish a book. I'm working on a music album, and I got that TV show. And so I got, you know, I'm kind of, you know, got a lot of stuff on my plate right now.
So you think you'll be back touring America late the year?
I hope so, yeah. It's all going to depend on if I can get enough interesting material to where I can have a good, you know, few hours on stage. You know, so that'll just depend on what happens in the world, what happens in my world, and how I'm feeling around August, which is when I'd have to start booking this or making the decision.
Well, hopefully it'll pan out.
I hope so.
I look forward to seeing more. It's,
oh, thank you.
I am a big fan of your work. I enjoy your spoken word very much.
Oh, thank you, man.
So, well, cool. Now, in terms of when I put up the review, the best way to contact is through the publishing, through the email.
I don't want to read the review, but
The interview.
Oh, I.
You don't want to read it.
No, I mean I just did it with you, so
okay,
I mean
you were there.
Yeah, I don't need. It's like taking a dog back to the place where it pissed on the carpet. Was that you? Like, well, yeah. Was it you? So, I'm cool.
Okay.
But I actually have to do an interview right now.
Okay.
So I have to go.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time. Good luck in Europe.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, it should be good. It's always a fun time there. There, it's a good audience I get out there, so I'm looking forward. Not looking forward to the jet lag, which is hard for me, but I'm looking forward to the rest of it.
Cool.
All right, man. I'll see you down the road.
Thanks. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.